This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, welcome, boys and girls. It is truly the first Sunday in February 4th, 2007, and it's mighty cold outside. For those of you who thought we might escape winter, think again. Although we didn't get the nice rain, sleet, snow that people expected here on Friday. and for some that's good, and for others that's bad. But nonetheless, here we are for what I think will be an interesting program, something that could have been a half day. We could have done 12 hours, I believe, on this particular topic, because as often I do, I have jammed together lots of different things to talk about in a 60-minute time period. We're going to talk about growth in the county area, taxes, lack of housing for some groups, and those who have joined us today to take on your phone calls. Two members from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Lindsay Doyer. Lindsay, how are you?
Good to be with you, Rick.
Thank you so much for coming in. I know you represent the Scottsdale area, which we could spend a whole program just on that.
Why don't we one day?
and I think we will. And we also have Dennis Rooker. Dennis, how are you?
Fine, Rick. Good to be with you this
morning. Thank you for coming in. And which area of the county do you represent?
The Jack Jewett District.
The Jack Jewett District. All right. So, boys and girls, stretch out your fingers. I don't want you to pull a muscle when you dial us up. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. 979-0919. Dennis Rooker, Lindsay Doyer here from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. And today's program is indeed housing, taxes, and assessments. Gentlemen, let's just start right at the top of things. I believe that the assessments, real estate property assessments, have gone out in the last few days or the last week or so, correct?
Yes.
My understanding is that assessment values increased about 30% since they went out in 2005, when they increased about 30% or a similarly large figure since 2003. And this has been ongoing for three or four biennial assessments, so that now for a lot of folks, their property is worth more than 100% than it was less than a decade ago. And obviously, people are rarely happy with their assessment unless they're immediately prepared to sell it, because they don't want to pay the increased tax on it. Who wants to jump in and talk about the positives of these large property assessment increases?
I think one thing you need to realize is that it's, on an annual basis, it's only 15%. And if it's, since it's a biennial assessment, it's double what it is on a yearly basis, and we're switching to an annual basis. For example, Orange County's assessment went up 100%, and that is split in, that is a four-year assessment, and they divided up among 4 years, that's 25% a year. So that is an increase that's greater than the Albemarle County's assessment.
But is that just looking at the least negative viewpoint? This is not my best topic on which to speak of my personal how things have affected me personally with this, but I read some comments on some of the more interesting websites, Waldo Jakewitz website and some others that are out there, Jim Duncan's, et cetera. And someone had tossed out a figure that I with my poor math, took to be correct, which is that if your home and property are worth $300,000, that your tax increase went up $660 from 2 years ago.
Well, Rick, let me give you, first of all, let me put this in perspective a little bit. Throughout the state, if you look at all the counties in the state, of all the counties that have a that have over 90,000 population, Albemarle County has the lowest tax rate at 74 cents per $100 of valuation. You've had increasing property values all over the state and indeed all over the country over the last 10 years. I think that's actually slowing down. My expectation is that in the next assessment, we're going to see much smaller increases in assessments. If you look at the days on market for real estate in the county, if you look at the number of houses on the market today compared to last year, it's up substantially. And I think what you're seeing in this last round of assessment increases is basically a catching up. And that if you look at sales, if you follow sales, and I close on some real estate transactions as an attorney, it has been very rare over the last 6, 7, 8 years when you had a sale take place that was at less than the assessed value. Assessed value is supposed to be at fair market value. Indeed, many sales have been taking place at 50, 60% or more higher than the assessed value on a regular basis. So I think, what you've seen is really catching up. The assessments have really lagged values. And my expectation is over the next couple of years, that won't be the case. The real question, when we look at the county budget and we look at assessments and revenues, is the county doing a good job of providing services for the amount of money that it takes in? And I would suggest to you, again, that it is. I go back to what I said earlier, that we have the lowest tax rate of any county of anywhere near our size in the state. We have a AAA bond rating. We're the smallest county in the country to have a AAA bond rating, which is the highest credit rating awarded. We have been selected as one of the top 10 best counties in the country in terms of our use of technology. We've adopted a 5-year business plan in the county. And we look at any time we're considering a capital improvement, for example, we look at the operating expenses that may flow for that over the next 5 years and plan accordingly. So I think we're doing a number of things in the county to make certain that we operate efficiently. And we certainly can operate more efficiently. I'm not suggesting that we're doing everything that we can possibly do. But at the end of the day, taxpayers, the people in the county want services. And they expect the county to provide those services, and we need to do it with in an efficient a way as possible. The property taxes are not our only source of revenues.
But why switch to a yearly reassessment? What is the benefit of doing that? I mean, I've seen where by doing it, you get, at least for next year, you get what some people are calling an extra or a free year of income that you wouldn't have otherwise gotten, and we can talk about that a little bit. But what is the major benefit in switching from every 2 years to every year?
Well, I think in the first place, if you look around the state, you'll see that most urban counties and most cities assess on an annual basis.
Yeah, but we're always different.
Well, I think as the county becomes more of an urban county, we are doing things in a way that is, I think, perhaps more fiscally prudent. You're required property to be fair. Property should be assessed relative to every other property at its fair market value, whatever the tax rates are, et cetera. The idea of is that people will pay taxes based upon their relative value of their property to the other properties in the jurisdiction. The fairest way to do that is to assess annually rather than once every 2 years, once every 3 years, or whatever, because there are changes in value that occur throughout those time periods. Second, I think people feel more of a sticker shock when they receive a 28% increase than they do if they receive annual increases of 14%, and I think they're more able to work that into their budget. from this county standpoint, it's a whole lot easier to deal with a more level revenue stream that increases at smaller amounts than it is to deal with a revenue stream that doesn't increase and then jumps way up and then doesn't increase and jumps way up. So to me, from looking at it as a businessman, it makes more sense.
11:11 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about Albemarle County housing taxes and assessments with Board of Supervisor members, Dennis Rooker and Lindsay Doyer. Lindsay, question for you. Dennis just made a comment about increase yearly versus biennial. So you get a smaller, less sticker shock value bill to the person who's to the homeowner who's opening that, and the county being able to plan in terms of income and how much money they're going to get. One of the things that I have seen and heard people discuss is not to reassess the property value until the home is sold or has some sort of transaction and trade of ownership. What do you think as a homeowner, when you purchase a house and you are expecting, you purchased the house in 1990 and you did so with the expectation of so many dollars spent on taxes, and here we are 17 years later and we're way beyond what the tax expectation was at that point. Is it fair to the homeowner to not be able to set aside any sort of budget in his or her tax concerns?
Okay, I think you need to consider two things. First, the assessment is based on the fair market value. It's required by law that we have an assessment based on the fair market value. The fairest way to do it would be annually, because that would have the increase for the shortest period of time, which would be an annual assessment rather than biannually, as in Orange County, every 4 years. So it's fairer to do it on a regular basis. Second, there are exceptions for certain categories of people. The elderly and the sick have a handicap. They have exceptions for that, for those categories of people, and you can receive some relief if you're in those categories. Secondly, we have land use taxation, which provides a break for the farmers. So there's a certain aspect of our assessments that gives the farming a break, and we've got that factor. And so we try to treat people fairly, and we try to every item in our budget, whether it's capital improvements or operating costs or schools, there are public hearings on it, and the public has a chance to come in and see whether we're spending our money conservatively or spending it properly. So there's oversight on all of that. And,
but the county citizen doesn't get any vote on whether or not their assessment is fair or the tax on their assessment is fair. Is that correct? Until this November, when the Board of Supervisor positions are up for re-election.
We've got a six-person Board of Equalization that will equalize and reduce the assessment if it's too high. And the average citizen, I believe there are 1,000 cases that come before the Equalization Board on each assessment.
But you're talking about people who aren't happy with their assessment and who appeal it?
They don't think the assessment's fair, so they appeal it. But let me just point out something that Lindsay said that I'm not sure that was registered, and that is that what you suggested about saying which is done in California, where houses are bought and then the assessments don't increase until the house resells. That's not legal in Virginia. Counties are not enabled to put in place a plan such as that. And let me give you an example of tax rates and relative expenditures. If a person has a $300,000 house in Albemarle County. They pay about $2,200 a year in real estate taxes. If they have one child in the school system, the cost of educating that one child this year will be over $13,000. The house pays $2,200 in taxes at $300,000 house. One child in the school system costs the county $13,000. That doesn't include police services, fire and rescue services, zoning services, social services, and all of the other services that are provided by the county, and transportation services. So, are people getting, you know, no one likes to pay more. But I would suggest if you put into place a situation where assessments on property did not increase, yet all the cost of all these services is increasing annually, you're sending a railroad down a track toward a tunnel that doesn't have an opening. You can't provide services the cost of which increase virtually every year without having some increased stream of revenues to support those services.
All right, guys, put your headphones on because we've got a call coming in. Tommy, are you there?
Yeah, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm good. We got Tommy from Lindsay's area down in Scottsville. What you got for us, Tommy?
Two things. The first, I want to make sure Mr. Doyle knows about the Bluegrass Jam sessions that will be at Scottsville, and look forward to seeing him there. He's a big-time participant in that. But my question is, how much does it cost in the budget for the assessor's office? And if we're doing fair market value based on just, let's say, the Real Estate Weekly, why do we need the assessor's office? And that's the only question I have, and let you guys have it.
All right. Thanks, Tommy.
We need a real estate assessor's office because we got to comply with the law and obey the law, and we've got to have a regular program, a fair program that's fair to all citizens for doing that.
Does the law require that we have an assessor's office?
Yes.
So the state law requires that we have an assessor's office?
It requires that we have a fair market assessment based on fair market value, and the only way we can do that is to have an assessor's office that goes out and evaluates the land and comes up with comparables that it applies as a value.
So Tommy's point about the Real Estate Weekly guide and what things are priced at and sold for, that doesn't qualify under that legal term in your minds.
No, we are actually required to have an assessor's office, and the assessors simply going to a magazine periodically and looking at some transactions, I don't think is a legally recognized way of arriving at the fair market values on property throughout the county. It really requires much more of a kind of a total, and there has to be a lot more data than simply looking at certain transactions. We also have a process which every county has to have in place for people to appeal their assessments. That goes initially through the real estate assessor's office. If you appeal, the assessor will come out to your property, meet with you, talk with you, look at the property, and sometimes make an adjustment if they think that they've made an error. If at that point they make their final determination, and the property owner still doesn't feel like it's a fair assessment, they can appeal to what Lindsay referred to earlier, the Board of Zoning Appeals, which is a citizen's
Board of Equalization.
Board of Equalization. I'm sorry, there is also an appeals group, but the Board of Equalization, which is a citizens group that is appointed just for that purpose, and again, that's a state mandated process.
All right, 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call with Albemarle County Board of Supervisor members Lindsay Doyer and Dennis Rooker. I got a call from Gary. Gary, hang on just 1 second, because I need to let everyone know that the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, mostly cloudy today, highs 30 to 35, partly cloudy tonight, lows 10 to 15, mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 20 to 25. Right now it's pretty clear across the listening area in the valley, 30, 37 in Lynchburg, 38 in Richmond, 36 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday morning wake-up call brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They are the winter outfitters in Virginia for over 30 years. Blue Ridge has footwear that's warm and stylish. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at BRMS.com. And we want to thank folks like Kale Jaffe, Brenda Clement-Jones, and Gene McCusker for contributing to WNRN's Fun Drive in the fall. It's because of people like them that you have the wake-up call every Sunday from 11 to 12. It's also because of program underwriters like the ones you hear this hour, as well as Orbit and Starlight Express. So stay tuned, tell a friend about this show and other programming you enjoy on WNRN. And be sure to support us in the upcoming Spring Fun Drive. All right, you guys got your headphones on? And let's fire up Gary. Gary's from Albemarle County. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Rick. Good morning. Great show. I'm glad you have our supervisors on. You ought to have them on more regularly so we can ask them some questions.
Yeah, it's nice for them to donate their Sunday morning.
Yeah,
all right, fire away.
Just a couple observations, and then I would like to just to hang up and have them give their comments back. The people out where I live in the Earliesville area, when they got their assessment notices recently, the comment that kept coming up over and over again is the land went up tremendously. The house didn't go up in equal proportion to the price of the land going up. And we're sitting around describing to each other our land, and we say, oh, I got 4 acres, or I got 5, or I got 6, or I got 8. But all of it is downhill, down into the ravine, down to the stream. You couldn't build another house on it if you wanted to. So we're concerned about, you know, how the land is evaluated when there only seems sometimes to be a 1 or 2 acre footprint that has any value other than the rest of it just being a buffer around us. The second observation, I see recently in a lot of the real estate newspapers and magazines, several houses being advertised below assessment. And I wondered if that was some trend, especially when in Virginia, houses are supposed to be assessed at market value. And I'll just hang up and listen to their remarks.
Thanks, Gary.
There's one fact I want to make. Gary's correct. There were 3,356 parcels in the range of 20 to 100 acres of land, and that went up 20% on an average of each parcel. And then there were 880 parcels of over 100 acres, and they went up 23% on an annualized basis. So he's right. The raw land went up at a greater rate than the houses, and I think that's because raw land is so scarce. I think the raw land in Albemarle County is becoming a scarce resource.
But if you can't build anything else on it, so there's no risk of selling it and making any profit on it in terms of subdividing the land, and really all you're paying for is the fact that there are fair number of trees between you and your neighbor, why would the land property go up so much?
Well, as a matter of law, the assessments have to break the assessment down into assessed value of land and assessed value of improvements. They're separated. You may have a $500,000 house. You consider your house worth $500,000, but the assessor is required to come in and say, you know, $200,000 of that is on the land, and $300,000 is on the house, and they have to be able to justify the market value assessment on each component. Now, I can't speak to specific situations about whether or not when someone is saying, well, I've only got one lot, how can you assess my land? They're required to do that. They're required to assess, and so the total of the land plus the improvements should equal an approximated fair market value for the whole package.
But I guess, unless I misunderstood Gary's question, was it sounded like he said anyway that the house stayed about the same, and I assume because few improvements were made, particularly to the house, no added rooms, no new bathroom sort of thing. But the increase, the 20% increase, was in the property. How is the property worth more money if you can't do anything with it because there's only one house on it. Because there's no way, as he said, it's all downhill towards the ravine. If it's the Gary who called in that I think, we are on the same road, not too far apart.
Let me say first, answer one of the things he mentioned at the end, and that is he's starting to notice some houses sell below assessment or be advertised below
assessment. Yeah, we didn't touch on that yet.
And that was what actually I had referred to earlier, that I felt like assessments had peaked out in this last valuation, and that you're probably going to see much slower increases in values going forward over the next several years. But again, the assessors have to look at the land and the improvements and break them apart. And if you tore the house down, what would the lot sell for? If you tore the house down, the lot would have a value as a lot. And so they're comparing that lot.
Is that how that's done? I mean, how that assessment is done? Is
they're comparing it to the raw value of a lot that didn't have a house on it, and then they're valuing the improvements, and then they have to come up with a package that would approximate what they think would be what a buyer would pay and a seller would sell for, neither under compulsion in a normal transaction.
Okay.
And I would say our assessors, I think our assessors do an excellent job every year. They are back rated. In other words, the state comes back in and checks the assessments against actual transactions in the market periodically to make certain that they're close. And our assessors are in the 95% category year after year in terms of their accuracy rating.
Rick, the key question you need to ask is, would the person who owns this property sell that property at the value that is assessed upon the property? And most of the time, the people would not sell for that price and probably want more for the property.
All right, 11:28 here on the Wake Up Call. As we talk about Albemarle County housing and taxes and assessments, and while I realize I have put Albemarle County at the front of today's show title, I think some of these things that we've talked about so far, state laws, in terms of assessments, et cetera, are certainly important to folks in other sections of our listening area, in Richmond and Lynchburg and over in Harrisonburg, et cetera. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. I see the phone's ringing now. I'll wait for Michael to bring in the info on that one, and let you know that Blue Ridge Graphics is helping to support us today. They're at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right, here comes our phone call. This person's anonymous. Hey, Anonymous.
How you doing?
Doing well. Your question or comment for our supervisor.
Just a comment talking back to earlier in the show where I don't know if we're being purposely misled or just misdirected by omission, but we're switching from every 2 years to every yearly assessments, and everybody seems to, the politicos seem to be making it sound like that is for the property owner's benefit. Isn't that all just for the county to capture that tax revenue sooner rather than having to lose that entire year of tax revenue on the assessment? And the second point about the cost of educating a child being $13,000, that supervisor makes it sound like there is no other funding coming into any of the school systems, no federal funding or state funding, and it's all the county that pays for every single dollar of educating a child. And I don't think that's correct. I think they do get some other funding from other sources. So can you clarify that?
Sure, I'll let him talk. Thanks for calling in.
As to the cost of education, when we look at our budget, overall budget, we include the state and federal revenues we expect to get in the budget. Of the $13,000 per child, about $9,000 of that's paid by the county, and $4,000 would come out of federal and state aid to the county for education. So you can take the same numbers if you want to just look at it from purely on the county revenue side, which is we have revenues that are totally obtained within the county, such as property taxes, sales taxes. In that same scenario, you have a $2,200, $300,000 house, $2,200 tax to the locality, and with one child in the house, you have a $9,000 education expense. And again, that doesn't include police, fire and rescue, social services, zoning services, parks, recreation, etc. So that's that analysis. The other part of the question was whether going to annual assessments was made to sound like it was solely for the benefit of the taxpayer. I don't believe that.
Well, I think I'll give you a benefit that you did say that it allows the county to see. You mentioned sort of a two-year roller coaster,
right?
You know, money, no money, money, no money, in terms of the assessment. And I'll give you benefit that you did say that at the time.
Well, like every business, the county's expenses increase annually. The biggest cost is the cost of personnel, and we have objective criteria upon which we base raises year to year, for example. And that's based upon comparisons of our county to comparable markets throughout the state. We use a service called World at Work to help arrive at an initial estimate of what raises will be, and they're broken down into minute categories, and then we actually compare those against a market of 17 other jurisdictions because we have to remain competitive. For example, for teacher pay, or we'll find teachers leaving, which we've had happen in the past. We could find ourselves in a situation where it's very difficult to hire new teachers because we're not being competitive. For example, only last year did we catch up with Fluvanna in teachers pay. So we have to; those things have to be followed closely. And I don't want to suggest that the increase of the annual increase is something that, as a business person, to me makes sense both from the taxpayer's standpoint and from the county's standpoint.
Rick, it's also interesting to note that the city of Charlottesville had a 15% annualized increase, which is about the same as Albemarle County's annualized increase. So we're in line with what is happening in that community.
Well, the city does it, but the city does it on an annual basis, right? As for a long time. And one of the things that we've had to deal with for quite a while is numerous citizens who call in when they get their assessments and think it's on an annual assessment. People don't necessarily remember every year when they get their assessment that this is a two-year reassessment, not a one-year reassessment. And especially since they'll read the article and they'll say, well, the assessments in the county went up 26% or whatever the number was, and in the city they went up 16%. Well, people call in and wonder why the assessments in the county are going up so much faster than the assessments in the city.
All right, I want to take this phone call, but Dennis, I want to make a quick comment, and it is that, you know, you've mentioned several times now about looking through the Board of Supervisors and the revenue and expenses from the business standpoint is, as someone who lives in the county, is don't forget that as a county citizen, I am a customer, and I only have so much money to spend. So I don't let's not forget that sometimes. A caller, another anonymous caller, how are you?
Yes, hello.
I think my citizens in the studio today are ready. Comments, questions?
Interestingly enough, and I hope I'm on the right track here, but my father and I were discussing a little bit of this matter a couple of weeks ago. My family comes from a very small, quaint county in southwest Virginia, so it's much further away than probably the area that your radio station services. But I'm calling from Lynchburg. And, you know, I guess part of it is I understand that when people come in and they want services and they want to make improvements, therefore you have to budget and, you know, you have to get the money from somewhere. You know, my family comes from this little county that we settled there back in the 1800s, and we sort of, you know, helped build the county, so to speak, but yet just average folks with very limited income, and I'm concerned that people moving in from all over California, New York, you know, just people with a lot more money and that sort of thing, they're going to basically push us little people out. And I know you said something about the perhaps some cuts or breaks if you have, like, farm type thing, or if you're elderly or that sort of thing. Are there ways that you can protect, you know, your land from being eaten up with taxes, so that basically the people that actually settled the land and made the land what it is today are not pushed away? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, if you're, Lindsay referred to land use tax, and if you're, if you have a parcel of land in our county that's 21 acres or more, and it's not devoted to residential development or commercial development, it's devoted to agricultural use or forestry use or open space, your tax rate is dramatically reduced. I think it's about a 95% reduction. So, again, if you're the people who have lived here for a long time, who have farms, who live on large tracts of land, don't pay very heavy real estate taxes. By the way, I grew up in Pulaski, Virginia, and Montgomery, and also in Montgomery County earlier, so I'm from Southwest Virginia.
Okay. Thank you a lot.
Thanks for the call. See, I told you that the people in the outer reaches, not necessarily Albemarle County, had some interest in the program today.
Rick, as an interesting aside, out of the 39,000 parcels that we have in Albemarle County, 4,800 of those parcels are in land use, and that they defer approximately 31% increase in value in that land over the past 2 years, and that's been deferred, and there's a break that's been given all people who own that land.
You know, guys, let's talk about land use for a few moments, because my research with parentheses around that on land use is there've been an equal amount of complaints about land use from those who feel that it is improperly used, it's being taken advantage of by those who really all they're doing is not paying their fair share of the tax until they turn around and develop it or sell it for the increased money that they can gather out of it. Who wants to fire back some feedback on that?
There's a 5-year rollback on the taxes, and that collects the money at the time this land sold, and that we want land remaining farmland, and this helps do it.
So, Lindsay, you're saying that's an unfair negative comment.
I think it could be perceived as being a fair comment if you want to treat it as you treat all other land. But we want to preserve farmland and open space in Albemarle County, and we want to protect the rural area, and this does it. This helps it.
There are several ways of looking at it. Certainly there are a group of people who have shown up at our public hearings and don't like the land use plan, which I think probably costs the county about $17, $18 million this coming year.
That's a lot.
No question, it's a lot of money. I would point out our transfer to the city this year will probably be, under the revenue sharing agreement, will probably be $13 or $14 million.
And for those who are new, that's the money that you share because for the area of the county that's right, that's the close ring around the city?
We signed an agreement years ago that the city agreed not to annex additional parts of the county, and the county agreed to a revenue sharing agreement. And under the terms of that agreement this year, the transfer will go up about $3 million, which is, again, an expense that we have, at this point, have no control over. We're legally mandated to do it pursuant to the agreement.
But that's so that the city fire departments will roll across the county line and help things, is it not?
No, they're not obligated to provide any services to the county for that. It's a good deal for the city because they get, this year, $13 or $14 million of revenue for which they have to provide no services. To the extent we utilize city fire stations, we do it pursuant to another agreement, and we pay for that service. And, of course, we're spending more and more money on our own fire services. But I did want to point that out.
I think it's important to understand that the Charlottesville-Albemarle community is viewed as one community, not two communities. And this keeps peace in the family. It keeps both sides working together.
That's extremely important. I think over the last 7-8 years, we've gotten closer and closer with the city to achieving that goal of viewing this area as one community.
All right, 11:41 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with Dennis Rooker and Lindsay Doyer from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Phone lines are open. Feel free to dial us up and ask your questions and make your comments. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, for 40 years, the Prism Coffee House played host to musical legends, but a rift between board members and leaders led to the 2006 closing. Now a new coalition of music lovers has formed to bring the music and the masses back. Speech or threat? As John Giuliano walked away from the First Amendment Slate Monument and his chalk message, he got a painful surprise. He was taken into custody by Charlottesville police. The episode highlights a sometimes murky difference between free speech and a threat. And what to do if the DMV makes a mistake on your official documents. The Hook, always with the answers. And Five Guys Burgers and Fries is helping support us today. They are Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, in the Hollymead Town Center, and now on the Downtown Mall, all here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E, guys.com. And don't be going anywhere, because George Bell will be here at noon for Les Temps Purdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Milli Vanilli, no Janet Jackson or Styx, but you will hear Oasis, Lou Reed, and Sugar Cubes. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, let's get the headphones back on, gentlemen. Because we got Bill on line two. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how's it going down there?
Well, I'm doing all right. You got questions or comments on today's show?
I'd like to ask those supervisors, if the assessor goes on the property and looks at it before he puts a figure down, it's what it's worth.
Yes.
I don't believe they do. I'm a retired person, and I never have seen one here, and I see my taxes went up 30% or 40%. I think that's very poor assessing.
Well, I think that I said yes because I know I've talked with Butch Beverly, and he's one of my assessors, and I know that he's out in the Scottsville community and looking at the properties on the ground. Now, whether he came to your particular property or not, I'm not sure, but he's been to comparables in your neighborhood, and he's been on the ground doing that because I see him out doing it.
So,
and again, Bill, if your particular assessment, if you don't think it's accurate, there's a procedure that's set out in the assessment information about how you can challenge that assessment. And the easiest step is just to write a letter to the assessor's office saying you disagree with the assessment and you would like to have it reviewed by their office, which they will do. And at that point, they will come out to your house, meet with you, talk with you, walk through your house. And if you don't like what they come up with at that point, if you don't think it's fair, you can appeal, as we said earlier, to the Board of Tax Equalization.
Do we have a deadline on that?
Is there a deadline?
Yes, there is. The deadline is in the notice that you got with your assessment. So
it's something like 60 or 90 days. It's not a long time, but I think it's a reasonable time.
So 60 or 90 days, Bill.
Well, again, I think Lindsay's right about that. But I'd advise Bill to take a look at his assessment because I think the date is on the assessment.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
I will take a look at that.
Hey, one thing I wanted to just go back to, Rick, was the discussion about the fairness of land use generally. And I want to point out that the land use enabling we're enabled to do it by state law, and we have a very, very narrow guidelines as to the kind of land use program we can have. We do not have much authority to deviate from those guidelines. So we can't really tailor make our land use taxation plan for this locality. Second, we have in our rural area plan recently adopted included a strategy to review land use, and we intend to appoint a committee which will include citizens to look at land use, how it's being applied, and whether or not it's being fairly applied, and if there are any changes within the state law that we could make locally that would make it a better plan. And third, just one of the rationale for land use is that if you have a farm that's on 200 acres, the tax on the house is not reduced. The house and the immediate acreage around the house is treated like any other house on a lot. It's only the property that's in farm use, in that case, that would be in land use. And part of the rationale is that land that is not built up, that is not developed, does not require many services. Land without a house does not have kids in schools. It generally doesn't require police services. It's not using the recreational facilities. In other words, most of the use of taxpayer services are by people, not by land.
What sort of discussion has there been about possibly lowering the tax rate to offset the increase in the assessments and the revenue that will come from that? Does the county need more money to accomplish the goals and needs for the citizens? And so, you know, you offset it by lowering the tax rate 2 pennies, or do you offset it by lowering the tax rate enough so that effectively you get the same income that you got last time?
It's interesting that you mention that. I think we hear from our constituents, and I hear from constituents who say we need to reduce the tax rate. I think that would be a popular thing to do, but
I'm sure
it would be. I think that there's also a downside from the standpoint of the notices for the taxes, and we need a certain amount of money, and we have to raise it through either taxes or bond issue. We've got projects in the work and in the pipeline, capital projects that are in the pipeline.
And by that, you're talking about schools and the new fire departments up on 29 and that sort of thing? Is that
what
you mean by capital projects?
Yeah, I'm talking about capital projects, including buildings, including storm sewers, roads, highways, all sorts of things that come with a growing county, and Albemarle County is growing. There's no doubt about that. We're going up 2% a year, and we need to have capital improvements taken care of, and we've got people coming to our meetings on a regular basis telling us they want their roads improved. They want their storm sewers. They want drainage problems taken care of. They want schools built. They want all sorts of needs they have. So we face that pressure. But we try to reduce the tax rate. We can consider that, but we need to also consider the needs that we have in the pipeline. And so we are caught in a balancing act, and we have to consider the ramifications of both issues.
I think that's Lindsay put it exactly the way that it is. You have to look at both sides. We also have, the last I could determine, about over $20 million of state and federal mandates in our budget. That's about, I guess on the tax rate, is probably 16, 17 cents on the tax rate of federal and state mandates. The transfer to the city this year is 10 cents on our tax rate. You take those two out, you've got about 25 cents on the tax rate going out to other jurisdictions for things that are mandated that we have no control over, and they increase year after year.
Then it's 1 cent on the tax rate equals over $1 million in expenditure, right?
About $1 million. This year will be about $1.4 million. The penny will equal about $1.4 million. One of the things I'd like to bring up is the cost of growth. And the General Assembly could certainly do a lot of, could certainly help localities out a lot if they would take some simple steps that have been taken in, I think, 47 other states, and that's to give localities adequate tools with which to deal with growth. We do not have adequate public facilities enabling legislation in Virginia, which means that a locality cannot turn down a development simply because the infrastructure is not there to serve the development. You think about that. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think you see that because the 0.01% of the population that is developers in the development industry makes gigantic contributions. They're the biggest contributors. The real estate industry is by far the biggest contributors to the state legislators for campaign purposes. We have unlimited campaign contributions in Virginia. And year after year, adequate public facilities legislation gets killed in committee, never even gets to a House vote. Second one is impact fees. We do not have the authority in Virginia to charge new development a fee based upon the impact on the cost to the locality that they will impose.
Yeah, that's a separate show where I wanted to get into some of the, what are they called, proffers?
Well, proffers are really different than impact fees, and we could take a long time talking about that. Proffers only apply if you have a rezoning, and even then, there's legally, you can't demand proffers. You can accept them from the developer if he offers the proffers. But impact fees would allow you to assess a cost on a new house, a new commercial building that comes in, regardless of whether or not you have rezoning, that is comparable to a factually based computed cost that will impose on the infrastructure of the community.
You're talking about like whether or not to add a stoplight?
Well, a stoplight. I mean, if for example,
put a turn lane into the road.
Well, when a house is built, for example, that house brings with it a slice of increased capital cost to schools.
Hang on, caller.
A slice of increased cost to transportation facilities. In other words, there are most states have a statutory objective way of establishing impact fees.
Some formula.
A formula that's allowed. And here, what we have is a situation where, because the legislature will not deal with these things, because they're pressured by the development industry, and I think they give in to the development industry, what happens is people who already live here end up paying for the cost of new people to come here, and it's an unfair distribution
cost. I think also you need to consider that the developers do spend a lot of money for proffers. For example, on North Point and Route 29 North, they're putting in a third lane along Route 29 North that the development goes along, and so they are significant amounts of money that are being spent by developers.
There are two different things. Proffers and impact fees are two different things.
Right. Correct.
We'll have to do another show on that. It's 11:53, and we're winding down. I got two calls. I'm going to take Brad first, and Mike, please hang on because I definitely want to hear from you. All right, gentlemen, you got your headphones on. I got Brad. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Rick. And Lindsay and Dennis. My understanding is that assessments are really meant to share the cost of government equally among property owners in the county. But the bottom line is my tax bill, which is a product of the assessment and the tax rate. And I think, Rick, you touched on this. First question for the supervisors, do they expect the county budget to stay the same as last year? I sure hope it will. I would also like to encourage everybody who's listening today who's unhappy about their assessment to go ahead and protest it. Protest the system by appealing their assessment. I think that we can send a message to the county supervisors by doing that. If enough people will appeal their assessment and look into the process that resulted in the assessment that they got on their property. And then the last one is, I wonder if a county tax based on the income reported on every Alamance County citizen's state tax return be more equitable than a tax that's based on the value of your property. We've got a lot of retired people or people on fixed income, and their property continues to go up. Property values continue to go up. Their taxes go up, but their income doesn't go up. And yet we've got a lot of other people that are coming from different parts of the nation, and their incomes are just phenomenal coming into this area, and for them the tax rate is just it's chump change for them.
All right, Brad, we're never going to get to all that in the last few minutes, but I'm going to I want to get to my other caller too, so I'm going to let the supervisors do some quick answering to you. All right, thanks for the call, man.
Sure.
I think we need to consider fixed income more than we do, and we do it with elderly and handicapped, and where you've got certain breaks that we give them, and we need to pay more attention to fixed income. So I agree with Brad. I think we need to integrate that into our formula.
Dennis, what's the county budget going to be this year? Is it expected to be about the same?
No, I would assure you that the county budget will not be the same as last year. The biggest expense item in the budget is personnel, salaries, wages, et cetera. Those don't stay the same year to year.
Is the budget going to go up more than 10%?
Medical, we haven't seen the proposed budget from staff yet, but I mentioned that the payment to the city will increase by $3 million this year as a matter of law under the contract. That doesn't stay the same as last year. Our jail expense, for example, is based entirely on a per capita allocation of expense. That has gone up, I think, about $800,000 in the coming year. Comprehensive Service Act expenses, which are mandated under federal and state law, we've already gotten the word, are going to increase about $600,000-$700,000 this year. Lindsay mentioned capital projects. We recently had about 8 or 10 capital projects come before us for signing of contracts, and they were about 30-40. They were about 40% higher than had been budgeted.
Right. Price of fuel is going up.
In that case, it amounted to there were about $30 million of capital expenditures that ended up coming in at about over $45
million. All right. I
can tell you the budget isn't going to remain the same. The question is, are we operating as efficiently as possible given the realities of the markets in which we operate?
Let's see. I wanted to take this last call because we got Mike from Atlanta. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. I'll let you ask your question or make your comment. Let me remind you and everyone else that you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And Mike from Atlanta, fire away.
Well, thank you very much. I'm fortunate enough to be able to listen to WNRN via the internet stream and able to listen all the time. So thank you, NRN, for providing that service to us from calling elsewhere. I'm also, my question is about the land use exemption, though. And as I understand it, forest land is not eligible for land use under 20 or so acres. I'm fortunate enough to have a relatively small 15 or so acre parcel of undeveloped woodland in Albemarle that I hope to someday move to. But meanwhile, my question is, as the county gets subdivided more and more and as the average parcel size decreases, is there any expectation that the land use threshold will be lowered for forest land? I mean, it doesn't seem to me that one of the explanations for the land use exemption was that the greatest burden on the county is on services is on land with people residing on it, obviously. And, sort of as the size of forest land parcels decrease, is there any move to change these thresholds that apply to its exemption as well?
All right, you each got about 45 seconds.
I'm glad you brought that up, and we'll look into extending land use into forest land. I thought it was protected, but I may be wrong. Dennis?
I think forest land is protected, but I think Mike was referring to the requirement that the parcel be at least 21 acres in size.
Okay.
And I think that, Mike, it's a good suggestion. When we have a committee that's appointed to look into our land use program, I'm not sure whether the 21-acre minimum is mandated by state law or if that's a county threshold, but we'll take a look at it.
Mike, why don't you write us a letter about it? Send us a letter explaining the situation to us, and we'll look into it.
I guess you can Google Albemarle County to get that address.
The other thing that Brad mentioned earlier I just wanted to touch on quickly is Brad suggested an income tax is a much fairer way to assess to raise revenues than property taxes. I agree with Brad. Unfortunately, under Virginia does not enable localities to levy an income tax or to share in the state income tax as a matter of law. The only tax that we control locally is the property tax.
Sounds like the state is really tying your hands a lot, isn't it?
Well, they've been doing that for hundreds of years.
All right, it is time to turn it over to Les Temps-Perdue, Dennis, and Lindsay. Thank you so much for coming in. I didn't get to like 90% of my questions today. We seem to stick with the assessment part, which I guess since the bills just went out, very appropriate. And I will hit up the gentleman to come back in the future to talk about growth and lack of housing in the area and a lot of the other topics that are always popular.
We'd invite all the people to come to our meetings to talk to us firsthand about this.
All right.
Good point. We enjoyed being here. Thanks for having us.
Gentlemen, have a great Sunday. All right. See you next week as we talk about the homeless.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call only on WNRN.